Mrajuhtuden.
Mrajuhtuden.
Welcome to the Anonymous Eskimo Project, a program where I have candid conversations with guests about difficult but important Indigenous topics such as mental health, sobriety, recovery, and missing and murdered Indigenous people. These difficult topics need to be brought to the light, not only to educate, but to uplift our Indigenous relatives. Oyana for joining me. I'm your host, Ralph Sara. On today's show, I have Braden Kedlin Johnston. Braden is an Inuit content creator, a producer, and a writer. Braden was born in Yellowknife, Northwest Territories, but resides in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, where he is a third-year philosophy student. Braden has been sober for 4.5 years, and on this show, Braden courageously shares his story for those that are still struggling. So guys, please help me welcome Braden Kedlin Johnston. Hi, Braden. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
Doing well, doing well. Thank you so much for agreeing to come on the show. I found out about you on Instagram. And you have a big following on both Instagram and TikTok.
Yeah, it's kind of blown up in the last few years.
Yeah, I really enjoy your content. Before we get started, can you go ahead and please introduce yourself so our listeners can get to know you?
Yeah, for sure. So I'm Braden Kedlin. I'm a content creator. I share about Inuit culture, specifically to Nunavut or the Kitikmeot region. And I share a lot with my mom, Hovak. And, you know, we share a lot about mostly about our country food. I share about my sobriety journey. And I share about what that's looked like over the last 4.5 years, you know, the ups and the downs. And yeah, I'm a current third year philosophy student at the University of Calgary. I hope to be a philosophy professor one day.
Oh, very, very cool. Like I said before, you have like 235,000 followers on TikTok and 244,000 on Instagram. And a lot of your content is showing others about Inuit comfort foods and clothing, you know, that Inuit way of life. But you are vulnerable most times to letting people know about your sobriety, like you said, and your mental health and your healing journey. Can you tell us a little bit about your healing journey?
Yeah, so I'm a recovered addict. You know, I was hooked to stimulants and alcohol and marijuana. And I dropped out of university at the age of 20 to go to rehab. I was really fortunate. My parents took me in, no questions asked. They didn't put a time limit on my healing. They just said, take care of yourself and we'll look after the rest. And so I went to rehab in Eskasoni, which is a reserve, a Mi'kmaq reserve in Cape Breton, Nova Scotia. And, you know, that's where I really started to affirm. I was never disconnected from, you know, my culture or, you know, Inuit ways of life, but I was never affirmed or confident in my identity. And it was at rehab in Eskasoni where, you know, I was really shown what healing looked like. And it was okay to be confident and comfortable in my cultural identity and who I am as a person. And my identity as an Inuk man is integral to who I am. So being able to affirm that is what really got the ball rolling in terms of my recovery journey. because I was sober for about a month then, but I didn't start healing. And it was when I affirmed that identity with myself that I was able to start healing. And so with my mom, we started sharing aspects of that, of not just that healing journey, but of our culture online. And my mother's a residential school survivor. And about 2 years before I started my healing journey, she started her own healing journey. And so I always say she laid the foundation for my healing journey, because she showed me that healing's not only possible, but it's something that we're capable of. And so here I am, you know, 4.5 years later, happier than ever, my journey and where it's taken me.
Yeah, it's amazing how far it has come. Now, like you said before, a lot of your content involves your mom. And on your content, you really seem like you have a loving and good chemistry with her. But I read before that was not always the case. And you said your mom is on a healing journey as well. I know she's not here to speak, but can you tell us about you and your mom's journey from your eyes?
Yeah, so my mother and I didn't always see eye to eye. You know, we had a lot of conflict, especially because she's a residential school survivor. And so, you know, she's carried that generational trauma with her. And like I said, we never saw eye to eye, and there was lots of conflict. And, you know, when I was about 18, 19, she really took the steps to heal and work on herself and to really, you know, uncover who she was. And when I watched her go through that, I internalized that I was capable of doing the same thing, and that I was capable of, you know, finding peace and happiness. And after I went through my recovery journey, my mother and I were finally able to see eye to eye. And, you know, I was able to, you know, find forgiveness. And through our social media collaborations, we've really become best friends.
I love watching you guys and your content. Now, you know, that you mentioned that you were not always, you didn't really identify, you know, in the Inuit culture at first. You know, there's a stigma of natives always being, you know, drunk and high, and systemic racism still exists everywhere, you know. In fact, in one of your clips, I saw you show a comment from someone that says, "Since you're native, do you get high, or do you get drunk and high before you eat?" And it's not funny, but I had to laugh, you know, because I find it crazy people still think this way. How do you think we as natives start to chip away at this stigma?
Well, I think I can't speak for the USA, but I know in Canada that First Nations populations have some of the highest sobriety rates in Canada. So I think, you know, with just more sobriety representation and more, I guess, promotion of what a healthy, sober lifestyle looks like is kind of like the way for that stigma to be eradicated.
I know lately social media has played a huge part in that, you know, because I've seen a lot of people taking pride in their sobriety and showing other people, you know, how they're living now as opposed to how they were before. And I think that is huge because, you know, it shows people that, hey, you're not alone in the struggles that you're going through.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a lot of stigma around, you know, sobriety being boring and being lonely. Because a lot of, you know, when you're living for the weekend, you're socializing primarily in the weekend, blowing off steam, drinking. And, you know, that's this idealized way of looking at fun and drinking, is that it's become so wound up with our idea of socializing that you have to drink to socialize.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you separate that, you know, it can be scary to be like, well, how am I going to socialize without drinking? Because you've identified all these different places you socialize with drinking, right? Like bars, clubs, even sports games.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you have people coming over for dinner, then there's this idea that you're going to have a few beers or you're going to have some wine. And, you know, it can be really intimidating and scary to try and tackle the fear of loneliness and, you know, that fear of losing friends when you not when you embark on a sobriety journey, but when you start to think about it, like you start to kind of visualize like what it might look like. And I think, understanding that you can still socialize and you can still have fun and you can still find fun, and there's so much more life to live when you remove substances, I think is a great place to really kind of tackle that stigma.
And the more people that we have showing that, the more that we chip away at that stigma. I don't think it's always ever gonna go away totally, but at least we can show people how things really are. You mentioned that you were recovering from stimulants. Can you let us know what it looked like, before you got sober?
So I was hooked to, whatever I could snort and swallow in terms of stimulants. So, but my biggest problem was I'd go on 3 day benders without sleep, where I was just using, and I was deep into addiction for about a year before I ended up having to call my parents because I was struggling between identifying reality from delusion, and I could no longer tell the difference between the two. And I had a brief moment of clarity in my last bender where I could tell it was either I called my parents or I was going to lose myself mentally forever. I had just this tiniest brief moment of clarity, just telling myself that. And so, and this, as soon as I called my parents, I fell right back into delusion. And I was stuck in psychosis because I have diagnosed bipolar 2, ADHD and PTSD. And so there's this tricky kind of reaction that happens with people with bipolar disorder when they smoke marijuana, is that they can induce psychosis. And so I was really struggling with that, with the combination of no sleep, not eating, and the abuse of stimulants and smoking marijuana. And so it really took a heavy toll on my psyche. And yeah, I was about 125 pounds at 5'11" when my parents picked me up. I was just skin and bones because I wasn't eating. And then, yeah, that's pretty much about it. I called my parents and I went to the psych ward.
In that moment of clarity, when you called your mom or your parents and they came and got you, was that like the most difficult thing that you've done in your journey, your sobriety journey?
Yeah, that phone call was one of the hardest things I've ever had to do. I had to admit that, that at the time, what it felt like is that I had to admit that I failed and that I fundamentally failed as a person. And, that I couldn't do it by myself anymore, that I'd reached the limit of what I was capable of. Luckily, though, my dad came and picked me up that very day after I made the phone call. So I was very fortunate.
Yeah, the reason I said that was because the hardest thing somebody can do is saying that I need help. That first thought and that first call, just to even say, I need help is the hard one of the hardest things that I think I experienced myself,
Very difficult.
Now you're working on a book.
Yeah. So it's just going to be a short book, but it's just kind of, I took kind of a different route to my recovery. I wasn't really feeling AA or NA or, other forms of recovery. I kind of took like a, how should I say it?
Non-traditional path.
Yeah. I took a non-traditional path and I really tried to figure out who it was that I was pretending to be and who it was that I wanted to be and who it was that I meant to be. And I really tried to reconcile with myself where it was that I was meant to go, because I was always hiding from the truth of who I was and the truth of what I've been through. And I came up with this list of gentle reminders, I guess is what I call them, that kind of compile gentle ways to remind myself back onto the path that, I believe I'm meant to walk. And they're just little reminders that help me stay sober and help me stay happy. And so in this book, I list out these reminders, and then I go into detail about how each of these reminders help me specifically on my sobriety journey and how they continue to help me on my sobriety journey.
Wow. Does it have a title yet?
Yeah, Success Through Suffering, Reflection of Gentle Reminders.
Awesome. Yeah, you mentioned that you took a non-traditional route in recovery. And I always seem to think, you know, I think recovery should be like inclusive and include everything from, you know, total abstinence, you know, the total hardcore abstinence, or all the way to like harm reduction, you know, I think, and everything in between. Because, oh man, the only person that can't recover is a person that's not alive, you know? If we're alive, I believe that, you know, there's a chance of recovery, you know? And that's the ultimate goal, is to live a better life and you know, to help other people, let other people know that we're not alone in this journey. So I applaud you for doing the book. That's so awesome.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been lots of fun.
Here's a fun fact. You were in a movie, right?
Yeah, I had a small role in the film The Grizzlies.
Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so it's actually kind of a cool story. There's a character in the film named Mike Johnston, and that character is actually based on my father, like my real life father.
What?
And yeah, so the film is about a lacrosse team from my home community, Kogloktok.
Okay.
Yeah, so Will Sasso played Mike, so I called him father on set. I called him dad because he was playing my dad. So it was kind of cool. No, but that was cool. I was, how old was I? I was 17 during the filming. I think we filmed in 2016. So it was a really cool experience.
Man, yeah, I love that movie. And, you know, I don't know if people out there know about it. Can you tell us about what the movie is or what it's about?
Yeah, so it follows like the trials and tribulations that youth face in remote northern communities. And it follows a lacrosse team from Kogloktok that makes its way through training and eventually down to the lacrosse nationals down in a southern community. And it follows the youth and a lacrosse coach and kind of their journey of connection together.
And there's some hard subjects that it brings up, like the disproportionately high suicide rates among Inuit youth, and you know, and you know, the alcohol use as well. Those are some of the tough scenes in that movie.
Yeah, it really brings to light like the harsh realities that northern communities face.
You also host and produce a television series. I believe it's called Story Hive.
Oh, it's produced with the help of Story Hive.
Oh, I see. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
It's a local series too that's aired in Alberta and British Columbia on TELUS Optic TV on demand, and it's also on my YouTube. So we highlight various Indigenous artists, storytellers, knowledge keepers, advocates, businesses, and entrepreneurs, and you know, we highlight them.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. So is it kind of like an arm of your TikToks and stuff like that, or is it mostly focused on people in the area?
It's mostly focused on local Treaty 7 artists and businesses and storytellers, advocates, knowledge keepers.
Okay, very cool. So awesome. You talk about your mental health a lot too in your TikToks as well. How do you keep your mental health healthy?
Well, I think one of the biggest keys is like what we were talking about, is just talking about it, just being open and honest, not just with other people, but with yourself. You know, be honest with yourself that, like, I got to be honest with myself that I'm having a bad day when I'm having a bad day. I can't just, you know, run away from it. I got to face it. And I think it's important to share that too, that, you know, you don't just share the bad days. Sorry, you don't just share the good days. You also share the bad days on social media to kind of destigmatize that every day's got to be a good day. When every day isn't a good day, you know, I'm prone to bad days, but, you know, I'm also prone to good days. is also something I have to remember. Like I'm not going to self-sabotage and convince myself every day is going to be a bad day. Like there's good and bad to be found in each day, but it's important to, to learn from mistakes and to be grateful for the positive aspects of life. And I also am a big believer in the idea of mental hygiene, the idea of viewing, our mental well-being in the same way that we might view our physical well-being. I like to do little things to keep my mental hygiene in check, like self-care. And for me, that looks like going to the gym, going for walks, writing and reading are a few ways that I keep my mental hygiene in check.
Yeah. I think a lot of people, when they talk about either mental health or sobriety or, even trauma in general, they seem to focus on the negative part of it. And it wasn't until recently I even did that. I fell into that category too at the beginning. But I watched something where somebody said, okay, we have this generational trauma, we have all these traumas that we've been faced with, colonization and everything, but we're also really strong, resilient people in our communities and in ourselves, so we can't forget that positive part of it either. We have to bring that positive part out and let everybody know we are strong, we are resilient, So it wasn't until recently that I watched that and I was like, yeah, I can't be a person that always focuses on negative. I know that these subjects are really tough and hard to talk about, but just like you said, talking about them starts the healing.
Yeah, absolutely.
So are you in Yellowknife now?
Yeah, currently I'm visiting my family.
Is that where your mom is?
Sort of. She's in Betchico. It's like a small community just outside of Yellowknife.
And what's the community in Yellowknife like?
It's very uplifting and there's lots of love and support that comes from that community.
So I know going back home is really like healing, when you go back to where you're originally from. Like I'm from Bethel, and when I go back home, there's a feeling that I get, this is where I grew up, this is where I was raised, and there's nothing like it. There's so many good people that live there. There's so many people that uplift you too, So it's like medicine for the soul almost.
Yeah, absolutely.
What would you say to someone who is, struggling in their mental health or, struggling with substance? How would you encourage them?
I'd encourage them by saying, it seems impossible right now, but eventually you'll cultivate the tools necessary to make it easier. You'll grow stronger than you ever thought possible. And I'd also encourage them to seek professional help if they have the access to it.
Definitely. You mentioned doing some self-care, and I see you have tattoos. Is that part of your self-care?
It's becoming part of it. It definitely has become part of it.
A lot of the tattoos or the Native people that talk about tattoos, I know some people get really defensive about it. Some people are, really education based, like educating people about it. And what's your view on like traditional tattoos and stuff like that?
I think, it's beautiful that they're becoming revitalized and they're coming back onto the scene, and it's so awesome to see. I think it's important, though, that people remember that being Indigenous it's not a monolith. There's no just one Indigenous culture, and that different peoples have different tattoos, and that it's important to connect to your specific roots and your specific people, and to connect to those tattoos, and not to cross appropriate I think is one really important aspect to it. And just being respectful and, you know, understanding the protocols that come with getting your traditional tattoos, if you do intend on getting them, I think it's important to, I think those are some important aspects that should be considered. I have a combination of traditional tattoos and, you know, modern takes on traditional tattoos. And so,
yeah. What are the Duntu, antlers? What do they represent?
Well, I, come from the Caribou people from Umimaktok. And so I got antlers that just wrap around my neck to pay homage to that.
Yeah, those are so cool.
Thank you.
Yeah. What's your favorite country food? I think you call it country food, right?
Yeah, I love just Caribou, just Duktu Kwak, right? Just the classic. It's a just reminds me of home, and it instantly satisfies my soul.
Nice. And that's the
frozen raw caribou.
Yeah. And you, you and your mom, I love to watch you guys, and you're not only, you know, sitting there, but you're educating people as well.
Thank you.
Yeah. Is there any other thing that you would like to say or get out there before we end this?
I'm just really thankful for you taking the time to have me on here and to let me share my story.
And how do people find you?
You can find me on Instagram at Braden Kadlun, BradenKadlun. You can find me on TikTok at Kadlun, KADLUN, and on YouTube at Braden Kadlun, the same as Instagram.
Very cool. When can we expect your book out?
Hopefully in the next 3-4 months is that its best case scenario.
Very cool. I can't wait. Well, thank you, Braden, for coming on here and sharing your journey and uplifting our native people. So, Kuyana Chaknak.
Thanks for having me.
Well, that's all for today's show. I hope you, the listeners, found some inspiration, strength, and hope. Listen next week when I have another strong, courageous person on who is walking with us on this healing journey. This program is available as a podcast. You can hear this and many more episodes wherever you listen to podcasts or at anonymouseskimo.com. Join in the Anonymous Eskimo Project on KSUT, Four Corners Public Radio, translating on 90.1 FM Durango in La Plata County, Colorado, 89.3 FM Central Durango, Colorado, 106.3 FM in Cortez, Mancos, and Montezuma County, Colorado, 88.1 FM in Pagosa Springs, Colorado, 91.1 FM in Silverton, Colorado, and 88.1 FM in Farmington, Northwest New Mexico. I'm your host, Ralph Sara. Biura!
Mrayuchtuden?
Mrayuchtuden.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.